episode 255 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, he's Frances Tomás, and Frances, since we last spoke, the Super League fell apart, Barca won two more matches, and the two Madrid giants dropped points. I guess we don't have anything to talk about today.
Hola, Gules. I think we do. I think that what you just mentioned means that we've got a podcast in our hands. Obviously, it's not every week that we've got so many good news, especially on the pitch, because everything off the pitch matters less. Let's go for it.
Yeah, I mean, before we get started, though, I do want to give a special shout out to listener Eric for making me feel welcome in my new home. You can't see it because we're still at the Camp Nou, but I've got a whole new setup and I have a bunch of new stuff on the horizon planned for everybody. So I always like to tease that exciting stuff. But again, a shout out to Eric, who is my new neighbor here and a devout listener of the podcast. So thanks so much to Eric. Yeah, because we have so much going on here, again, in my personal life, but this is the first one from the new house. So let's get into it. Let's do it. Are you ready, Frances? I guess I'm ready. So are you ready?
100%. 100%. Let's go for it.
Okay, so where we're going to start is where I didn't want to start, and that is the fact that I think you and I are both okay and happy with the fact that you and I were talking about this just a little bit, about the Super League falling apart, and it isn't so much about the correspondence that I had with members of our audience, some positive, some negative, but at the moment, here's where we stand. The Super League fell apart, only Real Madrid and Barca remain in technicalities alone, and for me personally, I'm glad that it fell apart. Honestly, I know we were labeled a certain way, but Barca's debt still concerns me to no end. And thinking about the ways that the football club with tourism, etc., helped the city and the region, I do fear that major issues with Barca's finances are going to affect the city of Barcelona and the greater Catalan region in unexplored ways. If their debt, that being Barca's, winds up being as bad as it should be, as bad as it seems to be, if $1.2 billion, and especially those short-term loans are not paid properly. And I guess very selfishly, as I was trying to go through this, because obviously, I mean, every response other than truly ours was one obviously overwhelmingly negative to the Super League happening. And as I said, I guess very selfishly, the most frustrating part of it was that those big clubs that don't really hurt, it doesn't really hurt the people at the top for this to blow up and to be a mess. And, you know, and it's a point that I had made. It hurts the smallest people on the ladder. And if Barca has finance issues and gets pushed to the second division, which would never happen because of how important they are to Spanish football broadcasting deals, obviously, I mean, it would be the end of the show, obviously. We'd lose all our listeners. I know you say that you love your club until you die, but not in the second division. People are going to leave. So, I mean,
I would still record it. I would still be here.
I mean, I would try our best, but I mean, financially, we were just, I don't know how it would continue on. We'd want to, but I don't know how it would continue on. So I think where I wound up leaving it is that if I was a supporter of any other team, even a supporter of Tottenham, who have their new stadium, or Arsenal, or AC Milan, or Inter Milan, if I was a fan of any other team in the Super League, and it wasn't just sitting on Barca's debt, I mean, obviously, I would have been very excited to see the Super League fall apart. I would have watched it like everyone else, you know. But as I said, Barca's debt is the anchor to this story that continues to keep me worried about it. But all that said, I think to think about it rationally, I've had a difficult time because I'm a bit too close to this story. And I think that's honestly where I stand on it, that I'm just too biased because I have a financial stake in Barcelona completely not going under. Yeah, and I understand people say that they're going to be around, but I mean, the numbers don't back it up.
Yeah, personally, I subscribe every single word that I said last week. That's the good thing about being honest and upfront, is that regardless of what the circumstance is after, regardless of what the next, let's just say, result could be, that could be on the pitch or off the pitch, if you've been honest with yourself, then you've got to be proud of what you said or what you stand for. I am disappointed that the Superliga fell apart, to be honest. As I said last week, I would be much happier for Barca playing high-caliber matches throughout the whole year. As the listeners obviously gathered from last week's show, I never wanted Barca to leave the Spanish League, but obviously having a competition in Europe that, let's face it, the great big matches only start in January, February, I don't think that's fun enough, to be honest. Also, if there's going to be a competition that we get Barca four times the amount of money that Bayern Munich got last season for winning it, I'm all up for that. Obviously, there are a lot of clubs that, a lot of people that disagree with that. But I, for one, think that it seems like UEFA and FIFA have to, you know, come out of this story like they are the defenders of football as we know it, and they have got the interest of every single club in the whole world. They defend every club in the world, and you know, they come out victorious. You know, now we're not watching matches with a little Ernie in the corner. And I was listening to the Spanish media this week, because it's been huge in Catalonia, but also in Spain. And there was someone there talking, and they were supporters of Levante. And they're saying, I'm not going to swear on the podcast, but what on blah, 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 blah have UEFA and FIFA ever done for Levante? How has this crusade for FIFA and UEFA defending the small clubs, how has that come about? Why? What impact has it had in Levante, Recreativo de Huelva, Sporting de Gijón, Oviedo? What have these clubs got with FIFA that they seem to now be flying the flag for all the small clubs? That I don't understand. And the second point is the entertainment of the competition. You know, I think that if you had, and I said it last week, I don't think that Superliga is ideal as it was put apart. In terms of the founding clubs will never ever be relegated. I don't think that was fair. And if you push it, there were clubs like Tottenham and Arsenal, for example, that haven't really won anything at European level for so many years, even qualified for, I know Tottenham did it a couple of seasons ago, but before that, in the last 20 years, they haven't really gone far in pretty much any European competition. So, but a club like Barca, I mean, we've qualified for, I think it's the last 16 every year for the last 20. I think that, you know, from our perspective, to be honest and to be blunt, I think it makes more sense that Barca and Madrid and the bigger clubs in Europe, like Bayern Munich, PSG, obviously they went in it, out of choice apparently, but I think it makes sense that they get a bigger piece of the pie, because out of the 100 matches in the Champions League, say, just to give a number, that we're going to be played in the next season, in the top 10 of viewership, Barca, Madrid, Bayern Munich, PSG, Manchester United, whatever, they were going to feature anyway. So,
well, I think what people are pushing back on is the closed system, and I've heard it's odd, because I hear almost a watered down response to this from, you know, people here in America. I mean, it was all over. I mean, everybody who didn't know about anything mm-hmm. related to the sport was talking to me about the Super League, and I think it's the fan culture is what I kind of not overlooked as an American, but I think for me, I'm so used to just, you know, the billionaires and millionaires and owners here in the U.S. having their closed system, having their single entity system, where there is no relegation, there is no promotion. And I underestimated the ferocity of how much people would hate a closed system, and how that is related to the footballing lore and the footballing culture in the U.K. and in Europe and in Germany and France and Spain. And it is interesting too that because already, and we hinted this out before, that the reaction in Spain about the Super League has been so, again, watered down in comparison to what we saw in the UK or even in Italy. And that is because for Spain, the inequity is, I mean, this is from the Spanish FA. So for Tebas, it is hypocritical, because he has allowed Real Madrid and Barcelona to take so much of the pie already. And I'm thinking about where this is going from here. So we don't need to rehash what we said. We don't have to rehash all that. So, I mean, aside from the personal stuff, I just want to say, like, Laporta is still in this deal because the club needs the money. That's why he continues to align himself with Florentino Perez on this. He wouldn't do that if Barca didn't desperately need the money. And it completely makes sense to me that people saying that Barca should be punished and deserve everything they get because they misspent their money. I understand that. I mean, that's justice, right? And it kind of neglects all the people that will suffer from it. I once again want to say that. And not just me. I just mean people around the club and people in the region who, you know, the club props up so many incomes in that region. And the players were against it. The fans were against it. So any punishment also affects them, and nothing happens to the owners. And this isn't just Barca. Yes, Barca is a board with an elected president, but everyone on that board would still be millionaires if they were forced to resign and Barca were in the second division. So for so many people that rely on the success of the club for jobs, that's not just Barca affiliated, but also Spanish football in general, punishments would change lives. And the final point before I let you go is that I get that people want justice. And if justice for us last week was losing some listeners, so be it. So be it. But I severely hope that any real justice comes in the form of making those clubs an example of reform. And I mean, I don't think there's a way to almost push out these owners and the ones who really plan this, because that is the evil of the Super League, which I think I need to do a better job of counting out that, yes, having these billionaire owners make their own exclusive club is a bad idea. But as we were talking about, I really hope this leads to reform through UEFA, through FIFA, because I think the idea, and we're going to see this rear its ugly head too, once PSG and Bayern Munich get to have what they want as a part of this too, and Borussia Dortmund as well, because PSG trying to sit on their high horse as well. Again, roll my eyes at that. But yeah, I think as far as reform and what needs to be done moving forward, there needs to be changes, but some kind of Super League I think is possible, but it can't be a closed system. If anything, that's what you've learned, that the billionaire owners cannot control everything. I'm all for a Super League or a competition with the best teams, if you will, playing more matches against one another, but that has to be an open system. There has to be something that Barcelona can be relegated from. There has to be something that Barca are going to have to deal with, their, you know, making bad decisions, as in, right? So there has to be some kind of consequence in this Super League. If you make bad decisions and bad signings, et cetera, et cetera, you get relegated from the Super League. And I think Barca, just how Barca can be, but don't get relegated from the Liga, they need to be able to be kicked out of this league if they make bad decisions like they have financially. Yep. And it leads to that point. I think there's nuance to this that I severely want to add, because this is not the end of the Super League.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you cannot disagree that it needs to be based on sporting merit, for sure. But ultimately, you also need to make the Superliga or whatever you want to call it, because I agree it's not finished at all. It may be, I think the seed has been firmly planted and it may not grow now, but I think eventually it will. As I said last week, there needs to be conversations between FIFA, UEFA and the bigger clubs as to not with threats, like, you know, you try to leave the playground, so you're not playing with us anymore, sort of thing. That's too childish. That needs to be overcome. But if the answer to not having a Superliga is having the new European Champions League, the revised one, in which there are five more teams included in the initial group stage, and there are 10 teams, and they're playing five away, five at home, that's literally adding more games to these players' legs. That is basically what FIFA and UEFA have done for the last 40, 50 years, which is not really caring about the players, not really caring about the players' rest. And to be honest, not really sharing enough revenue with the bigger clubs, or not with the bigger clubs, with any club, you know, because FIFA and UEFA taking 40% of all the money made of all the revenue in the Champions League is absurd. It's ridiculous, and it should not be allowed to happen. Obviously, I think that the Superliga was presented really badly. I think that Florentino Perez really could have done a much better job. He could have explained everything much better from the beginning. We still don't know how the other five places for relegation, etc., would have been given. So that wasn't explained very well. And obviously the overwhelming response from the fans was basically overturned. We don't want this. But I certainly agree that football belongs to the players and football belongs to the clubs. And it shouldn't belong to this sort of big brother, UEFA, FIFA enterprise that takes 40% of the earnings for their own enjoyment. I really disagree with that.
Yeah, and I talked about at the end of last week's show that, I mean, for goodness sake, the Women's Champions League semifinals were yesterday. And I can only speak for us here in the States. It wasn't being broadcast on any major network. And here in the U.S., I mean, this is, again, the Women's UEFA Champions League. You couldn't even watch it on live on Barca TV here in the U.S. because it was blacked out because of region. So I could only even watch it on replay. That's, again, the semifinals of the Champions League. And what a joke that is. I mean, for me, I don't know who to blame even, you know, for UEFA.
Well, completely, let me just do an aside, and this could be classed as quite opportunist, but which four clubs were in the semifinals of the Champions League? Manchester City, Barca, Chelsea, and PSG.
Yep.
So the bigger clubs.
Exactly. Right. And they couldn't even find a way onto a major broadcast network. It's completely embarrassing that when we talk about the Super League rolling out, and then when UEFA comes out with their stuff every year, that women's football continues to be, I mean, I understand that it doesn't create the revenue generated by the men. That's not what is being asked of it, right?
It's just but it certainly won't generate any revenue if they don't broadcast it in the biggest market in the world.
Exactly. So it was embarrassing to me. And I mean, to me, it was great that it was on Barca TV and that many culés around the world were able to watch it. Frustrating here in the States, whatever. But Barca shouldn't really be carrying that game. Again, I'm glad they did, but that should be a major broadcast partner. And the other thing too is, for the Super League, punishments potentially to be handed down in the future, punishing Barca from the top down will only hurt the women's program. It will only hurt the academy and the other places where corners will need to be cut. That's what's going to happen here with the Super League punishments. And I just don't know how to punish the owners, I say it again, without hurting basically everyone but the rich people who run these clubs. So that's where I am on at the punishment down the line. I mean, it stinks that UEFA is wrong and the Super League just happened to be, this is a made-up word, but wronger. You know, the Super League, they get a 2% on good ideas and UEFA gets a 15% when all is said and done on good ideas. So, you know, I'm going to put that in the rearview mirror. Let's talk about happier things. We're done.
Yeah.
I actually do want to talk about the Barça Femení because, again, they played in the Champions League of the semifinals again for the fourth time in 5 seasons. And they also got an all-important away goal in the Champions League against PSG. And with Lyon, who were knocked out by PSG, fortunately, with PSG, Chelsea, and Bayern Munich, just looking at all four of those teams, Barça Femení, not that they're favorites or anything, but they have now, with that away goal, put themselves in a really good spot to make the final again, and they don't have to face Lyon in the final. They have to face a team that has comparable talent and comparable debt in Chelsea and Bayern Munich if they can get past PSG. Because yesterday against PSG, I got to rewatch it. It was an ugly game. There were so many fouls, maybe a handball against PSG. I questioned the referee a bit. Not the best performance by them either. But nevertheless, Barca with a better team on the road. And Jenny Hermoso, Caroline Graham Hansen was being doubled by PSG the whole match, giving some respect to her. Mappy Lyon was dealing with Katoto and did a pretty good job. I think Barca, though, they did struggle without Patry, who was out due to injury. As a defensive midfielder, I think she hands some organization on the press that Hamraoui just doesn't do. And I'm hoping that she can come back from injury before the second leg this coming weekend. But we'll see. But coming away from it, Barca just, they seem to be in the driver's seat, though. Right, Frances?
Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to claim that I'm more of an expert in feminine football than you are. I have watched the highlights. I didn't watch the whole game this time around. So I really do think that getting an away goal is important. And we're just going to see what happens in Barcelona on the return leg.
Yep. Yeah, Jenny Hermoso got the goal on the back post, just floating the back post, and made the argument. And I think depending on if Barca win the Champions League or not, I'm going to boost up the Jenny Hermoso campaign to kind of remind people that she might be the most informed striker in all of European football this year. So we talk about the Ballon d'Or a lot on the men's side, but I think Jenny Hermoso and Alexia Putellas should start to get some shouts for potentially putting themselves in the Ballon d'Or conversation on the women's side. Because, I mean, it always usually comes down to international competition for them because the Champions League is not broadcast on television. And then in the United States as well, Marta is always a main figure, or one of the U.S. players, because of World Cup winning or international winning. I think looking at domestic competition and looking at European competition in the Ballon d'Or race for the female side should start to be a conversation. Now, we are going to talk about the men's team. Again, we are how many minutes into the show? About 20 minutes in, and we have yet to even speak about the two matches that Barca's first team played since we last spoke. It was Hedafe 5-2. Messi goals. There was plenty of Messi in that one. An own goal as well. Kind of gross from Hedafe. Araujo gets a header, and then Messi gives Griezmann the PK. Those are the 5 goals from Barcelona. Villarreal was a Griezmann brace. That obviously happening yesterday. So the way to talk about all of this and make it concise and not make the show go 3 hours long talking and breaking down two matches that already happened, Frances, I thought we could have and bring it all back. This is in the way back machine for our old, old listeners. I think we should do a little bit of a La Bolsa this week to discuss some of the good and the bad from these two matches. So I'm putting you on the spot here. So I want to give you a moment to think about it. And I'll go first here with my first stock up. So for those, again, a reminder of La Bolsa, it's basically stock up, stock down. That's what we're doing here. So for me, stock up after Hedafe and Villarreal is going to be Clement Lenglet. After Villarreal in particular yesterday, Gerard Moreno was coming in, the old Espanol, again, we could use plenty of curse words to describe him. He's a Raul Garcia. he's that kind of caliber of character. The Casemiro, he fits in that category, and Gerard Piqué knows him all too well in a negative way. So I thought it was going to be Piqué again against his old friend Moreno, but instead it was Clement Lenglet getting most of that task, and it was Piqué having to track, as I spoke about last week, almost sideline to sideline with Paco Alcácer, the old Barcelona player, basically playing underneath Moreno. Not really a 4-4-2, it was more of a 4-4-1-1, if you will, for Villarreal. And so I was actually really impressed by Lenglet. Gerard Moreno has proven this year, it's Messi, it's Benzema, and then it's Moreno in terms of goal. He already has 20 on the season, and Lenglet yesterday, 2 clearances, 3 interceptions, 1 tackle, 1 block shot, and winning 5 duels. Clement Lenglet, for as difficult a season as he had, and whether or not you want to say he should still be sold, you know, I think if he is sold, his stock has gone up in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and he was good against Hedafe as well. So, yes, Lenglet was a bit on fault for the Chukwueze goal. Alba and Lenglet could have played that better. He got turned around. But all that said, I think Ling Lei was really solid against Gerard Moreno, and I take the positives in that 2-1 win from Ling Lei more than I do take the negative against Chukwueze.
He was. I think that Seri Ling Lei makes no sense unless you got an outstanding offer that you really can't say no to. I think that Ling Lei is definitely good enough to be in the top four centre-backs for Barca next season. You can push it a little bit more, top five. But if you've got Piqué, Eric Garcia, Araujo, you've got Mingueza as well. I think that Ling Lei is one of the, maybe not a starter in every game, but he's one of the valid players. And I think that if this season has shown anything in comparison to the previous four, is that you need 18 very good players to compete until the very last match in every competition. And I think that Ling Lei would certainly add. I think he's had, you can argue it's bad luck, but I think that even mentally as well, he's had a weaker season by his basically first and second season of Barca standards. But that's not to say that he cannot do a job for us. I think he's good to stay. But obviously, if they offer you 30 million or 40 million euros for Ling Lei, you sell him. That's quite clear. Now, I don't know it with La Bolsa, but, you know, highest stock, arriba del todo de La Bolsa, for me, is Frenkie de Jong. I think that you can pick up from his excellent performance in the Copa del Rey final, but he continues to grow. I was listening to a debate in Catalunya Radio as well, and they even brought it up as well. Arguably, Frenkie de Jong is now better than the player that, and Ronald Koeman mentioned it in his press conference as well. He's arguably better already here now than he was at Ajax, because he's doing a lot more playing against, let's face it, and we go back to what we talked about before, much more high-caliber competition. I think La Liga is stronger than the Eredivisie. I don't think anyone could disagree with that. So, very physical. He's effortless on and off the ball. He does get sweaty. he does get very pinky, especially, you know, when you're playing at 3 o'clock in the Spanish sun. But ultimately, he never really feels tired. He's very generous with his stride. He's very generous with his work off the ball. I think Pedri has been celebrated all season because of recovering balls and doing a defensive job, but so does Frenkie, to be fully honest. I also think that the vision and the understanding of the system and the distribution of the ball, that's something that Frenkie de Jong in his first season of Barca last year had. That's something that we knew he had from Ajax. So that, you know, that is not the reason to celebrate his improvement. He had that, and that's really, really good. That's why he's a starter at FC Barcelona, to be honest. But the difference now is that he is doing the... I'm going to say something stupid now. He's doing the Paulinho runs. You know, the Paulinho crazy runs into the box following Messi, whatever. He's doing them constantly. He's doing with a lot more criteria. And he's sort of liking himself in this new box-to-box dropping from midfield situation. And especially in the game against Villarreal, he was constant. He was involved in every single play moving forward. He wasn't sort of holding the ball like Messi 15 years ago used to do. He is involved, but he's offloading, he's passing, he's overlapping. He's associating with Messi very well. Again, you don't really depend on Messi that much when you've got someone like Frenkie doing what he's doing. Between Griezmann and De Jong as well, there's been an understanding, and they don't tend to occupy each other's spaces. I think, especially in the last match as well, Frenkie's finishing could have been a little bit better. He would have definitely got on the score sheet without a doubt, but ultimately, I think he was outstanding in Villarreal and in his previous two matches as well. So without a shadow of a doubt, he's one of the better news this season. And as we said over the last 10 podcasts, there's a lot of good news coming from the Camp Nou, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to take the easy one too. I think you took De Jong, and my stock goes up for Ronald Koeman as well, because what he's doing with Frenkie De Jong is opened up those spaces for De Jong. And what I like to see is that if you track the way that Barca's been playing tactics-wise, because against Hadafe and against Athletic Club, against those teams that are just going to defend for 90 minutes, you've got to break them down. And I think you kind of say that it's more about the effort and more about the energy and more about continuing to fight the full time to get the points. But against Villarreal, I mean, it was really a tactical battle between Unai Emery and Koeman. And Koeman winds up winning that one. And I think not only the form that Barca are in, but he's taking the things that he learned. In the beginning of the season when Barca were playing with the double pivot, De Jong and Busquets, the press didn't make any sense. You'd have Busquets, I mean, and for those who were listening in the fall, Busquets would be the one to play farther forward, almost as this bit of a trident in this triangle pressing in the midfield. But now the way that Pedri and De Jong and Busquets press, it isn't really even a double pivot pressing, but they understand where they need to be and the moments they need to be in. And I think the press against Villarreal was some of the best that we saw all season long. They were continuing, especially in that first half, continuing to force turnovers over and over again. And De Jong, as you mentioned, is putting himself in the positions to succeed offensively, and he's doing the work defensively now. And it seems like we'd have to almost pick one in the fall when Barca weren't getting the results. Is he going to have a good defensive match or and be in the right spots on the press, or is De Jong going to have be involved in the attack and get box to box? And, you know, I know we say Paulinho and Tarvidal. I want to go farther back and say Boquero is actually the one that De Jong is reminding me of, just because his importance in the buildup, especially against Hedafe, on one of those Messi goals, it was a second Messi goal, when Messi makes that long run, reminding of us of the old Hedafe run that he made, it was De Jong who worked the 1-2, who held the ball up. And for De Jong to basically be playing as almost a right attacking midfielder at times, but then also he's playing back as not really a double pivot, but, you know, he's all over the place. And that's a good thing that we can't really pigeonhole him to one particular position, because he's been all over the field. So my credit goes to Koeman, not only for what he's doing with De Jong, but also for having the system that completely makes sense. And I give him a lot of credit too on the partnership with Griezmann and Messi. Those two together, and maybe this is, again, me going twice in a row, but my stock goes up for the Messi-Griezmann partnership this week. With Dembele dealing with that injury, Barca were fine because they got 5 goals in 2 matches from Messi and Griezmann. Messi winds up having a typical Messi game against Hedafe. He's completely going nuts. And then Villarreal, in through their midfield, they put Capu, Parejo, and then Coquelin comes on, and they put as many bodies on Messi as possible. Sure, fouling him, kind of disrupting things, that disgusting tackle from Trigueros that winds up being a red card that was really worrisome. So Villarreal were putting it to Messi, but because of the system that Koeman has built over the course of this season, you have Griezmann. I said De Jong probably could add the 2 goals you mentioned, but the fact that he was in those spots is a compliment to the system. Pedri had a long shot he could have had, and even Busquets in the last 3 matches has 3 chances on goal. 2 of them were accidents. He kind of ran into the ball as the ball was kind of pivoting and ricocheting off him. But still, Busquets getting involved in the attack as well. Araujo getting a goal on the header. And set pieces wind up have been an option for Barcelona. Mingueza, remember, against El Clasico, Mingueza gets one broken play on a set piece. So Koeman is now basically gotten to the point where he's built a system that Messi, if he has a masterclass, Barca are winning that match 100%. Right? That's what's going to happen. If Messi shows up, Barca are going to win. But for the days that Messi is marked well or fouled or can't really find the match the way that, you know, he always seems to, and he only has to be a playmaker and can't really be a finisher and a playmaker and all those different things, then you have depth. The rest of the squad is in a position to succeed. In the point even where that 3-man game on Griezmann's first goal yesterday, Mingueza, that long pass over the top, only happens because Messi checks back to the ball and Griezmann curls his run and in vacating that spot. That is how you draw up a 3-man attack, or the third man option, if you will. That is how the third man option works, to a T, and Griezmann finishes off with a little dink. So, I mean, I went twice there, but my stock is way up for Koeman's system right now, and my stock is way up for the partnership between Messi and Griezmann as well.
Sure. So, am I going for the stock down? Is that how these works?
I guess so. We haven't really hit one of those yet. I mean, I think we might have. I only have one name on that list, and it might be the same person.
I don't know, because obviously we haven't spoken about this, because I don't know this what's happening. Because, I mean, you know, we just wing it here. Dan's super prepared. I know nothing. So, I don't know what you're going to say, but I think that Sergi Roberto's stock.
That was exactly it. That's the only one I had. I mean, Barca have won every match.
I've got 2 then, but let me say about Sergi first.
Yeah.
So, let's be fair to him. He's just come back from injury. Not just injuries. So, he's been out for a considerable amount of time. Now, unluckily for him, from a sort of individual selfish perspective, unluckily for him, Serginho Dest has grown enormously in his absence. I don't think that Serginho Dest is the finished product at all just yet. But what he certainly adds is that that ability to dribble and that willingness to, that resilience to just try and try and try again and then eventually get through. So that is something that Sergio Roberto just does not have at this moment in time. And if you look back over the last 3 years, he's pretty much been our starting right back the whole time. He never really had it. He's not incisive. He's good in association. He's good in possession. And he's good at not making too many mistakes. He's become stronger defensively, which is credit to him as well. But I think that especially when you're playing with 3 centre-backs, obviously centre-backs opened up to the side, with Mingueza and obviously Lenglet on the other side and Piqué in the center, you don't really need a right back. And you don't really need a right back that is going to be as conservative as Sergio Roberto, let's face it, is. So when Sergiño Dest comes off, the difference is quite, I'm not going to say abysmal, but it's quite noticeable that Barca's willingness to move forward is just not the same. I've got a stat that was quite eye-opening that was mentioned in the retransmission in the Catalonia radio during the game. And in the first half, and it's not really Sergio Roberto, it's not on the right, it's not Sergio Roberto against Dest, but Jordi Alba had five crosses on, like significant crosses inside the area in the first half. And in the second half, he had between zero and one. There was one that you could give, but it wasn't sort of a run towards the byline. And in Sergio Roberto's side, I think he had one significant cross, whereas Sergiño Dest and Alba were zooming through both sides the whole of the first half. Now, you could say it's situational, you could say it's circumstantial, you can say that, you know, Barca were far more defensive in the second half in Villarreal than they were in the first one, but I think that's no coincidence. So if you have to just pick the one whose stock has gone down, and obviously we're saying this in the context that we're winning a lot more than we used to,
yeah.
And Sergio Roberto was not awful, but I think that, yeah, substituting Dest hurt us offensively.
Yeah, and so I want to wrap up from my, at least my La Bolsa. So this is the last one I have. So my stock is even on Pedri because yep. Pedri...
That was my second one.
So, oh, for going down. So I argue that it's my that his stock is actually even because I think people are getting on it that he needs a rest, that obviously... Okay, but anyway, Pedri's being asked to do a job.
Sorry, what? What are you saying?
Pedri's being asked to do a job and he's doing...
Dan, you mentioned who? Shall we talk about it for the next 2 hours in the podcast?
Okay, so Pedri's being asked to do a job and people are asking for him to get a rest, which is fair. I think especially against, as the season dwindles down, as Barca only have 6 matches left, and this is where we're going to end the show after this by talking about the Liga table and the standings and all that stuff, sure. But people are asking for Pedri to get a rest, and I want to remind people that what Pedri is being asked to do is supremely complex, and that's why I just have to give it an even, because even if he is tired, especially in the second half, it seems like Barca looking tired in the second half of both matches. There's different levels of pressure that they're bringing, both against Adafe and Villarreal. So that drop-off, not so great. That is where my stock would go down, would be the second half for Barca recently. I want to remind people, too, that Barca have the most goals of any side in the last 15 minutes in La Liga this season. Villarreal, meanwhile, had the most in the first 15, but anyway, it winds up being the 23rd minute, whatever it was. But Barca wind up have been really good in the second half of matches, both in the Copa del Rey, obviously, with all the comebacks, and the Liga, and that has helped them get to the position they're in the Liga table at the moment. All that said, Barca have not been great in the second half against Hadafe and Villarreal. Now, Hadafe, they were up. They could probably take the foot off the gas a little bit. Villarreal, that one was kind of a dogfight, and Villarreal fought back with 10 men. Sometimes that red card does galvanize you. All that said, Pedri did look a bit tired, yes, but again, to conceptualize what he's being tasked to do, you have to watch his positioning. You have to see the things he has to do. Like against Hadafe, his job against Hadafe, and this makes a lot of sense, against a low block team like that, the way to do it is to exploit the space when they do, on the occasion, bring men forward. And so on the occasion that they did, 5 goals, at least 3 of those, were, even if he wasn't directly involved, came down to the positioning of Pedri when Barca were able to take back possession in their own third. So what happened was there was a moment, I think it was Piqué or Lenglet, one of the two, winds up getting the interception, finds Pedri, and he winds up being the release valve on that counterattack. Pedri's the one who picks it up in his own third and looks immediately to Griezmann or to Messi or to the diagonal ball for Jordi Alba or Sergiño Dest. He winds up being the release valve. And that is such an important task. Yes, Busquets does it when in possession. And so Busquets, I think even on that first goal to Messi, where he winds up that beautiful, beautiful through ball straight through Adafe's lines, he gets the credit on that because we had time to process what he was doing. But on the counterattack, Pedri was essential to taking some of that pressure off. And against Villarreal, he winds up having an entirely different job. And his job that time was actually to man mark Dani Parejo, which he basically did in the first half out of the game. And that was what Pedri was tasked to do, to follow either, well, Parejo, and then, or it was Capu. And Capu's got, what, 3 inches and like 40 pounds on Pedri? And yet Pedri physically did that job. And so I completely understand why the kid is exhausted in the second half. But the things he's being asked to do is the nuance, to support Messi when Messi's in possession, to be a release valve for Busquets for him to make those line-breaking passes. So if the ball is interception, Pedri is in the proper spot. I'm going to say it again, rest defense. These are complicated things that an 18-year-old kid is being tasked to do. He's not just, my stock also has gone up for Conrad De La Fuente, by the way, 4 goals in 3 matches as Barca B are nearing the promotion playoffs. But anyway, so for the young players like Conrad De La Fuente, if he was called up to the first team, his only job would be to run at the defense, right? Serginho Dest, what is he being asked to do? He's being asked to do a bit on the defensive side, but when he gets the ball, and this, I would love to patent this, Frances. This is an idea I have in the works. Someday I want to try to work with Serginho Dest and try to sell his own sauce, because he has more sauce than almost every player I've ever seen. But anyway, so yeah, I had that one in the chamber. So Dest, you know, his job is to dribble at the opposition and to unbalance the back line and to stretch the field, sure. But Pedri is being asked at an 18 also to do really complex things. So my stock frame is even. Because yes, he's not really impacting the game offensively, but he's being asked to do so much stuff. There's no way I can put his stock down at the moment. Well, I hope I made the argument to sell. Not to sell, but to buy Pedri. Buy Pedri now. Buy that stock, Fred says. Don't sell your Pedri stock.
Just tell me where to go and we'll be investing on that. Yeah. Pedri's progression this year is arguably the biggest success story of the whole of Barca. You've got sort of a particular player. And I've got not much more to add to what you said. I don't want to repeat what you said. Just he's 18. He does extraordinary things on both ends of the pitch. And he has declined a little bit in offensive production. I think that's quite clear. But what he brings to the team is essential, because Barca, and we've seen this before, is not a team that needs 11 superstars. It is a team that needs Messi to be the superstar and everybody else doing exactly the job that they need to do. And Pedri has been the best partner that Messi has found. I'm going to not exaggerate here. Over the last 4 seasons, he's the best partner that Messi has had since we had El Tridente, to be honest. And he's done it at 18. He associates well, and he's the best partner that Messi could wish for. Obviously, Ilaj Moriba coming on. To be honest, I don't really care who comes on. I'm a Barca supporter. I'm not here for the one player. I'm here for the team. And if Koeman, who has turned the club around, thinks that Ilaj Moriba needs to be the one coming for Pedri because of his physicality, but not just that, because that's easy to say, physicality, speed, whatever, but his aggression, his willingness, his understanding of the Barca system, and let's say it as well, because I don't really hear many people saying this, his ability to play the ball to the right spots, yeah. Which is something that when Ansu Fati got promoted, everyone went for, oh, his speed, his goal scoring, but his understanding of the Barca system was second to none, and that's why he's slotted like a little puzzle. And let's face it as well, he doesn't want to take any protagonism. He doesn't want to be, you know, tweeted about all the time. He's just there to do a job. This is Pedri and Bosales Moriba, and I think that Koeman is right to trust them both and to give Ilaj more and more playing time as the season develops.
Yeah, and the final one, this is where we'll cap the show, is when we look at the Liga table, the final La Bolsa stock to look at is the fact that Barca's stock is up. They have played one less match, so Granada is the one to make up on Thursday. And if they were to win that match, Barcelona are at the top of the table through 33 matches played. They'll wind up being on 74 points. And Granada is a tough team, as I mentioned earlier, Europa League, but Barcelona have dealt with Granada pretty well. There are teams that Barca don't match up well with, and there are teams that Barca do match up well with, and Granada is actually one of those teams that they do match up well with, because Granada would like to play, and if you play with Barcelona, Barcelona will play with you. And Granada defensively are really well put together, but as we've seen in recent weeks, whether it's Griezmann, whether it's Messi, and remember, Dembélé has kind of been dealing with that injury, and the fact that Dembélé gets to work his way back from an injury and not be thrown right into the fire is something almost new. That yes, he was hurt this year, and it's been a great sign for the first time in his career, right? He's been able to just, hey, we'll give you 15 minutes at the end of the last 2 matches to get reacclimated and find your feeding again and just get healthy to check to see how you're doing. And that's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. And I think that for Barca to be able to do that, then it links back to Griezmann performing at the level that he's performing. Because Koeman was not desperate to get Dembélé back in the team, because whoever took the spot, in this case Griezmann, is doing a great job. That's the same reason why Piqué didn't really need to be rushed back. Some people could argue that he was rushed back anyway for El Clásico. But it is important to know that the subs are keeping the subs. You know, the 13, 14, 15, 16, 17th player in the squad are the ones that are keeping this team alive and are the ones that are making the biggest difference from previous seasons to the current. As to for the situation in La Liga, you cannot count your chickens before they hatched. So we need to play Granada for sure. I think that Barca, having just won the Copa del Rey and having found a system that is solid at the back, because we've talked about, you know, the final two thirds, the four attack, the two attacking thirds throughout this show, but that we can do all that because the three center backs at the back is actually working very well, and the defense is really solid. It's enabling our fullbacks to push forward, so if we're not really that challenged at the back, and Granada, you know, they're, as you said, they're a team that like to have the ball, but I don't really see them coming at us too much. I think if we can secure the back, we can push forward with all the weapons we've got, and we should be winning that one really. With five matches to go, given the momentum and the 20, because it's not just the last three matches, the whole of the 2021 year that we're having, it is hard to see how a shaky Atletico de Madrid are not going to drop any more points, really. I think they will. And Real Madrid, obviously, still challenging for the Champions League as well. They're not going to put all their artilleria, all their artillery in La Liga, even though they would like to, but I just don't think they've got enough. So at this moment in time, Barca have got a very good chance of going all the way. And I know that the vast majority of our listeners listen to us every single week. I am flabbergasted that this group of players, with this coach, starting the season with no precedent, Barca Gates, Bartomeu out, and all of that, to be in this situation with six matches to go, to me, is extraordinary. To be honest, I don't remember any season like this for us since the Johan Cruyff Tenerife Ligas back in the 1990s. And I was debating whether to say this in the podcast, but I am going to say it anyway because, you know, who cares? Back in the day when Johan Cruyff was the manager in Catalonia, everyone talked about Cruyff's flower in his butt. It was it's a Catalan expression. I don't know if it translates well into English, but it's all about being lucky in the key moments. And I'm beginning to think Koeman has inherited that flower. Maybe it's a combination between the Catalan flavor and, you know, Holland, etc. But let's hope that they water it and we continue to enjoy it.
Yeah, Johan Cruyff yesterday would have been 74 years old. So a happy birthday to the whole Cruyff family for Johan Cruyff. And yeah, this is the interesting Cruyff stat I had for you. 71 points and 76 goals now for Koeman in his first 32 La Liga games. And that stat is courtesy of Mr. Chip on Twitter. That's two more points and eight more goals than Cruyff's Barcelona in that same period. So for as good as Johan Cruyff came, hitting the ground running at Barcelona at the Camp Nou. And yeah, I mean, the most surprising thing to me of this whole thing is just Messi. Is that Messi, after all the things that happened over the summer, after emotionally saying goodbye to the captain, after seeing him struggle out of the gate when he had gone through all that emotional stuff over the summer, and then he didn't really have a real preseason, and, you know, he was struggling. The guy's going to win the Pichichi Trophy. The guy already won the Copa del Rey Trophy, and he's going to potentially be the captain to what has been a miraculous comeback for the Liga title, potentially. And you mentioned six games left. Yeah, it's Granada, it's Valencia, then it's the one that matters, Atletico Madrid, Levante, Celta de Vigo, and Eibar. And to me, the way I see it is that even if Barcelona now at this moment, I mean, this is just math, even if they draw with Atletico Madrid, if they win their other five matches, which again, Granada, Valencia, Levante, Celta de Vigo, and Eibar, all of those teams are farther down in the schedule than even Villarreal. So they don't really have, they don't have another top seven team in the Liga other than Atletico Madrid. So they can actually almost live with a draw against Atletico if they can just win five other matches. And that is certainly something that this FC Barcelona team can do. So yeah, we started the show quite negative, but I wound up ending it on a positive note because I think that's, again, the stock is up for FC Barcelona at the moment and La Liga is back in their hands. They took care of business. They won the match against the teams they had to in Getafe and Villarreal. And the other teams, as we mentioned, Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, their horses are running on dry and they're dropping points. And they also have those matches left. So yeah, I'll give you the final word. Then we'll say goodbye.
Just to say that Ronald Koeman yesterday in his press conference used words from Diego Simeone, which is partido a partido, which is match by match, which I really don't remember any Barca manager, to be honest, ever using. But he's totally right. If we can fight the 90 and be successful in the coming matches, even if we drop more points than the ones you just mentioned, I think we should still be champions. See what happens.
Yep, Campeones, work to do. And I keep saying it on the locker room, on the Barcelona YouTube and Twitch, and on the live coverage that we've been doing, that there are six finals. That's what it is. It's six finals. Zidane says it so much that we kind of roll our eyes that every press conference, he says every match is a final. But for Barca, it really is. They control their own destiny. Six finals, six matches that matter. They don't have to worry about the Champions League. They worry about the summer. So for all those who say, why is Pedri starting every match? It's because there's only six matches left. That's why. Is that there's six important matches. So Koeman is going with the 11 players he trusts. The subs know their job. They're coming in. As you mentioned, they're changing the game. So Barca in a good spot. And I think that wraps up another edition of the show on a really positive note. So again, we're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. You can find me on Twitter at HiltonD13. Closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast. You can ask questions there. And then Patreon is how we continue to make these shows. Again, thank you to all of them all over there. And that's, again, how you also get to me personally. And you can also listen to these shows without ads. And it's a little incentive to support the show. So we're on YouTube. You know, they're there with the match reviews. They come out the day of the matches or the early in the morning thereafter, but usually the day of. That's the Barcelona Podcast. And with the summer coming up too, Frances, we've got some fun stuff planned. I remember the survey that we did a few weeks ago even a few months ago. So we got a lot of different ideas about what people want to hear from. And so the YouTube channel is the place for that. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.
Forza. Awesome.